Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, April 4th, 2006 regular meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. Alderman Dan Coleman is running a few minutes late, but he will be here shortly. Do we have anyone here tonight who wanted to speak on a matter that is not on our regular agenda? Okay. Very good. All right. We do have one proclamation that I wanted to read. Whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center assisted 434 survivors of sexual violence and their family members, friends, and loved ones during 2004 and 2005 fiscal year. And whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center works with the county's two school systems to provide all students with age-appropriate information about sexual assault prevention, reaching 9,007 children and youth during 2004-2005 school year. And whereas the coordination of the Orange County Sexual Assault Response Team, SART, is bringing together law enforcement, the medical community, the legal system, and other community advocates to improve services for survivors of sexual assault. And whereas one in five North Carolina women have been sexually assaulted at some point in their lives. And whereas in the United States, rape is the most costly crime to its survivor, totaling $127 billion per year, considering factors such as medical costs, lost earnings, pain, suffering, and lost quality of life. And whereas in the United States, one in six women and one in 33 men have experienced a completed or attempted rape at some time in their life. Whereas persons with disabilities in North Carolina experience sexual assault at a rate of four times higher than persons without disabilities. Whereas there are 5,915 registered sex offenders living in the state of North Carolina. Whereas the blaming of the victim continues to be an enormous problem in instances of rape and sexual assault. And whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center, a nonprofit volunteer agency, which has been serving this community since 1974, is working with others in the community to stop sexual violence and its impact through support, education, and advocacy. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the month of April 2006 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in the town of Carrboro. And I encourage all citizens to speak out against sexual violence and to support their local community's efforts to prevent and respond to these appalling crimes. Thank you all for bearing with me. Oh, yes. And the Orange County Rape Crisis Center is distributing this year, as they did last year, these teal-colored ribbons, which are meant to show solidarity and to raise awareness of sexual violence in our community. Last year, just on a personal note, I wore one of these ribbons that they gave to the members of the Board of Aldermen for a good portion of the month of April. And I have to say that based on that quite a few people asked me, what was it for? And when I told people what it was, more than one in six of the women who I answered that question to said, I've been a victim.
Wow.
So the ribbons can be obtained from the Rape Crisis Center you can visit their website at ocrcc.org. All right, moving on. We are on to our consent agenda. The manager has requested that we make a minor change to, is it item C4?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and pull item C4. And is there anything else from that grouping that anybody wanted to discuss
three.
Separately?
I just had a question on three.
Okay. Mr. Manager, if you'll tell us very briefly about the consent agenda, and then we'll
okay.
cover 3 and 4 and then consent agenda.
All right. Item 1 is the approval of minutes of the previous meetings of March 21st and 28th. Item 2 is to request to adopt a revised debt policy. Item 3 is a request to set a public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment, reducing the number of ETJ and transition area representatives on the planning board. Item 4 is an authorization to execute a lease agreement for wireless internet antenna co-location on Town Hall Tower, which I'd ask that that be moved off the consent agenda. And item 5 is a request to raise funds to purchase and install a tennis backboard at Wilson Park.
1, 2, 3, and 5. All right, we had a question about 3, if we can just cover that real quick. Go ahead, Jackie.
I just want to know where it's coming from. Why I want to know what
the matter was raised at a Board of Aldermen meeting, and we asked the staff to kind of look into the possibility, because we were consistently having a problem filling the vacancies, because basically the size of the ETJ has, after the annexation, has been reduced.
Okay. I'll vote to move it to public hearing, but I'm not sure that because I've gotten some phone calls about it and questions about it, people that don't necessarily think it's a good idea. So, but a public hearing is certainly the place to discuss that, so that's fine.
Okay. All right, so it's been moved that we adopt 1, 2, 3, 5, and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Matter passes unanimously. Item C4, Mr. Manager.
Yes, sir. You have at your places a revised resolution related to this item entitled a resolution authorizing the town manager to execute a lease agreement with Clearwire LLC for an antenna co-location on the tower at Town Hall. In your original agenda packet, we had proposed that this be done through private negotiation and sale. Upon further review, we need to revise the method of authorizing going forward with the lease. If you look down at the last whereas, you'll see that it says a negotiated offer advertisement and upset bid procedure. So it's just a slightly different procedure. If you all accept the resolution tonight, you would be approving the contract subject to an upset bid process. We would advertise for 10 days, and if there were no upset bids, then the contract would be awarded to Clearwire LLC. If there were other bids, which is highly unlikely, we'd go through the processes outlined in the general statutes to proceed until we got the highest bid possible. If I leave anything out, all right.
Move the item.
Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The matter passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1.
Okay. Item D1 is an item that normally would be on the consent agenda, and it's a request to approve a budget amendment, and I'll tell you in a minute why we ask that it be on the regular agenda. The town's receiving $22,490 in FEMA grant revenues as reimbursement for work performed by two town firefighters in providing aid to towns affected by Hurricane Katrina. Staff does recommend the adoption of the budget amendment, but we have Interim Chief Travis Crabtree here tonight with firefighters Scott Walker and Scott Trombley, if they could stand. These guys spent more than 30 days away from home assisting the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and I think, Travis, we had about six other officers in the fire department who had volunteered. There simply wasn't a place to put them, but I'm really proud of our department for stepping up, and these guys left home for more than a month to serve other communities. So thank you all.
Thank you, gentlemen, and to the entire fire department for the I know that I'm sure that at some level it was had an impact on our whole department, and we're really proud of the two of you in particular and of our entire department. Would someone like to move the ordinance?
So moved.
Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Item D2, Mr. Right.
D2
D2 is discussion of creating a New Horizons Task Force, and again, I call your attention. You've got a corrected abstract in front of you. The board at its retreat on February 4th and 5th of this year set community building as a primary goal and discussed opportunities for achieving that goal. The New Horizons Task Force will act as a natural communication conduit to the Board of Aldermen for the newly incorporated areas to address transition interests and concerns not addressed by other town advisory boards, committees, or commissions. This is Randy and Dan, so staff doesn't have any further comment.
Alderman O'Donnell, you want to?
I move that we approve with the corrections.
All right. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I'll second the motion. I don't know if we need any discussion. I think it's been.
There is one person signed up to speak.
I got a question.
Sure.
The resolution, just so we can be clear, does the resolution include the fact that minutes will be kept?
Yes, it's in the packet, actually.
Okay.
Joel doesn't have that page for some reason.
Ah.
Yes, Sal wrote out guidelines for the minutes.
Yeah, we have a set of here.
There's a set of guidelines that follows the resolution.
So there's something included on that.
There you go. Okay. But
it's not in Joel's pocket for some reason.
That's all right. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Katrina Ryan had signed up to speak.
Hi, thanks very much for putting this off until I could be here. I tried to get somebody here for the first meeting on this, so it didn't get to be cumbersome. In talking with neighbors in the various neighborhoods in the newly annexed areas, we've got some concerns about this board. The first, and this is kind of a minor concern, but it's important in keeping communications open, is the name itself, the New Horizon Task Force, doesn't mean anything to anyone. Somebody in Camden, if they were interested in what were going on and were trying to Google something on the website, and they Googled, you know, annexation, they wouldn't necessarily get an agenda or a set of minutes or anything from this committee. So in an effort to sort of facilitate communication, maybe a less creative but more informative name is appropriate. The second question, and this is something that I emailed Randy and I emailed Lydia, and we're all kind of having trouble understanding is this sort of Mark referred to it as sort of Dan and Randy's thing, indicating it was kind of an unofficial kitchen cabinet advisory board, which is fine. I mean, it's an absolutely legitimate purpose to have an informal, every elected official has sort of an unofficial group of advisors. And they sit around and get different ideas, and that's one thing. However, if it's an official town entity, then process really matters. This is a neighborhood who really feels that they've been abused by government process. And the single best thing you can do to bridge that is to keep everything extraordinarily open, comply with open meeting laws, publish the agendas early, and minutes, which means it needs to be staffed because you can't rely on a volunteer secretary to necessarily get things to Sarah up on the web on a timely basis when you're relying on a volunteer who may and or may not be there for every monthly meeting. And then you get, you know, the number on the board last time, it was not particularly proportional. The Highlands North had 400% of the representation per household of either Fox Meadow or Highlands, of the larger neighborhoods. And then the conversation changed to, well, it can be informal and anyone can show up. You have to define the number of people on the board if it's going to be a task force, if it's going to be an official town entity, because otherwise you can't define a quorum. So how do you have a vote that counts to make a recommendation to the board unless you have an official number? The final thing is there's really great concern in the neighborhoods about this being sort of an appointment-only board, that there are neighborhoods who feel that their relationship with the board isn't necessarily a great one, and yet this task force would then only serve as a filter to keep sort of everyone's real opinion from coming to the board by being deferred to the task force instead of coming here and talking to you all, by each neighborhood homeowners association or unofficial neighborhood association not being able to choose who they send with their concerns. We feel like it would become actually a hindrance to effective communication rather than any help. And those are, we appreciate, nobody doesn't appreciate the effort and the thought that's gone into it. But first of all, I would like to know if it's official or sort of unofficial. And if it's official, then it needs to be just, I guess I'd even suggest, since it's only being set up for a year, making it an ad hoc subcommittee of the NTA board, since the NTA has gotten very small. And then you're not doubling staff time and stuff dedicated to it.
Katrina, had you thought of any names you want to suggest?
I thought I could ask my neighbors, but they
that's
just
right. I was wondering if you came in with one.
I think anyone who applied for the open seat should be considered because they're obviously
no. I mean names of the committee. You said
names
you didn't
for the
like
committee.
The name.
Oh,
I'm not asking you to think of one on the spot.
No, I haven't. No, I have not previously thought of one.
Okay,
but
thanks.
To begin with. Thanks for the civics lesson. Those of us that have been in government a while, I guess, need them sometimes. This is not a behind-the-scenes informal thing. Nothing's gone on that's broken open meeting laws or will go on that breaks open meeting laws, and I think that that implication is kind of unfair and politically motivated, and I'd appreciate those kind of statements not happening. The reason Mark said that this is Randy and Dan's thing is because Randy and Dan served on the subcommittee which moved forward with it, and the idea was Randy's. It has the full approval and the full support of the entire board. There are many kinds of things where we have several board meetings, several board members working on something. The other comment is that, yes, it will have the reason that minutes are being kept is so that the rest of the board will know what's going on. The reason that it has appointments is so that people can vote and their votes be counted just like every other advisory board and just like every other meeting that happens in this town. There are open meetings, and anybody who has a concern is welcome to come to those meetings, and those concerns are considered, and they are listed in the minutes. So I'd like for this committee to get off to a good start and for people to know that it really does have the full support of the board and that people really will be listened to, and to imply otherwise undermines the work of the committee before it even gets started.
Thanks, Jackie. I just want to add one thing to that on one other point. I'm really glad you raised the question about the filtering, because I'm thinking, I had thought that that's something that might occur to people. And it should be very clear that there's no way we could constitute this committee that would remove the right of any citizen or group of citizens to come before the board or any other advisory board. And it's certainly not the intention of the New Horizons Task Force to presume that that should happen. I don't think it should happen. I think that when citizens or residents have a particular concern they want to bring to us, they ought to. But the point of the New Horizons Task Force is to provide a forum in which residents who are new members in the northern area of Carrboro, new citizens of Carrboro, can get together, talk about concerns, and Randy and I can provide some direct board attention through that process, bring issues back to the board as a whole, bring them to staff, and otherwise help facilitate the resolution of whatever questions or concerns come up.
And there's nothing behind the scenes.
This is something that now needs to be on the record. The reason that I need to bring these questions up in public is both Randy and Lydia received an email from me asking these questions. What is its purpose? What is its charter? What will the membership be? How will the membership be determined? And I wasn't answered.
Excuse me. You were answered.
No, you were not. No, I wasn't.
Absolutely. And I will
we forward you. We were CC'd.
I CC'd several people on the board. So you were CC'd. And I really... you know, I'm concerned that that you know you seem to be uncertain that you could be on this board. That's what seems to be coming forth. That maybe there's an issue of whether you would be appointed. That's what overarchingly is coming out through all this. And I urge you to apply, and I urge you to, you know, become involved. Whether the New Horizons Task Force sees that they want to keep that name or not, that's going to be up to the New Horizons Task Force as it is. But to signal to folks in the public that this effort is something that's behind the scenes, you know, is absolutely untrue. And to signal to the public that I have not been open and available to you is absolutely untrue. So, I will re-forward you the email that I sent you.
I would be happy to have it with the original date on it because I haven't seen it.
Okay. That can certainly be arranged. Alex?
Thanks. Actually, just to try to cool it down a little bit, I just had a couple of questions and perhaps maybe some notions that might help. And I was wondering, Randy and Dan, if you'd had an opportunity to think about, like, you know, aside from the discussion that went on, there are a couple of points that with some clarification there may be, you know, we may be able to help. Katrina, do you think it would be helpful, for example, just the discussion of the name, if, for example, there were a parenthetical reference, say one would hope that the formation of the group and its charge would be posted prominently on the town's website with a button linking to the page, perhaps a parenthetical, very short description of what the group does underneath the title, so that just folks understood that right up front. Do you think that would help clarify that?
I think it's fine, and I wasn't trying to make any comment other than these are neighborhoods who, for lack of sort of a better analogy, really kind of want Honda government. They know it'll do what they need it to do relatively efficiently at a reasonable price, and don't pay a lot of attention. So, you know, a mention, you know, in the Herald's coverage of what the board did last night, they're not going to know what it is.
But just something real brief, you know, under, again, the title, which is just sort of a parenthetical description of what the thing is and what it does. Just,
well, we can state the purpose as it's given.
It's just an idea for something that may help address that without going into the whole discussion of what, you know, whether the name's really descriptive or not, which is hard. The staffing issue... Yeah, that one issue that was raised, of course, is procedure and ultimately how the group's going to do its business over the long term. I think that's a legitimate question that you raised. It's still kind of an open question and obviously needs to be determined. Do you think that there would be that there would be some utility to including in the guidelines or in the empowering resolution, if you will, some charge to the group to arrive by some date certain, for example, after its formation, at a list of procedures that the group will use to make decisions? Because I think it's likely, as the group gets its legs and proceeds, that decisions are ultimately at some point going to have to be taken to a vote, right? And so one would at some point need to come up with some procedures and process so that you can do that kind of stuff so it doesn't get stuck.
We are operating under the guidelines that this task force will act as a regular advisory board under the same guidelines with the same official status.
I'm just talking about its internal procedures. So in that case, we could probably then just lift the procedures from any of the other advisory boards.
Just say that it will operate under the same guidelines as every other advisory board.
Right.
Okay. And I think the other point that's well worth making is my understanding, or anyway, my intention is that when we get to the point of making appointments to this board, that we're gonna appoint the people who have applied, and that it's anticipated that it's going to be a very inclusive group. And so, I'm hopeful that there will be a lot of people who will apply, and I don't think there won't be any sense of anybody being excluded from it. And of course, as Jackie pointed out, the meetings of the committee will be open, and I would anticipate, knowing both Dan and Randy, that the meetings will be conducted in an inclusive manner, so that it will not be not actually be if somebody comes who was not appointed to the board because they hadn't applied or whatever, but they want to voice a concern, that that sort of input will be welcome. So with that,
I know that Sharon had some questions as well, and since it was at the end of the evening's docket, I thought that she was getting her kids pizza before she
got it. It was at the end of the evening's docket? It was not on our agenda at the end of the evening's docket.
I was in a conference all day. She said that it was one of the last items on the agenda.
No, it's not. And we did not intentionally move anything. It has always been on the agenda where it is now. So if Sharon was not able to get here for that, then I'm sorry, and we'd be really happy to get emails from her and respond.
Okay.
So, Mayor, before I move this thing, I would like to say thank you for your concerns, Katrina, and I think you should give this board the benefit of the doubt, and I really truly believe this is two volunteers from this board who are doing a good faith effort to outreach to our new neighbors and to provide a voice to accelerate, I think, even a more fruitful, integration of what the town is all about. And in my understanding, the understanding of the board is that this would be an advisory committee just like the other advisory committees, under the same guidelines, under the same transparency of everyone else. And I think we encourage your participation and everyone who wants to have a voice, but also this in any way impedes you to come directly to this board, just like any of the other advisory boards does it either. So the availability for direct participation is there, and I think these are folks who wants to put their volunteer time and effort to work for the betterment of our neighborhoods, and I think they deserve a chance and your support.
This is a collection. I mean, this isn't my collection of concerns. This is a collection of concerns between groups of neighbors who have talked about it. About what we liked about town and how everybody we talked to and staff is great and our concern, everybody that we've dealt with and what we've actually liked about being annexed and what we haven't. And this is one, these are, sort of the group of concerns, but that it's not a neighborhood where you're going to get 40 people show up. Two of us came rather than 40 of us.
Okay, call the question.
Okay, I think it is probably time to vote unless there's any desire to amend the resolution.
I just have a proposed amendment
briefly
that might help clarify. It just codifies a little bit what we were talking about in terms of procedures, which would be to add a number 6 under the guidelines, which would read that the task force shall use accepted guidelines consistent with town advisory boards, consistent with standing town advisory boards in its governance and decision-making procedures. Randy, is that
absolutely
cool with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, so that's been accepted as a friendly amendment, it sounds to me. It's been moved and seconded, moved by Randy Haven O'Donnell and seconded by Dan Coleman. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
Thank Randy and Dan for your work on this.
You're welcome.
All right. Item D3, the connector road policy.
This is a follow-up discussion on the connector roads policy in the Lloyd Street and North Greensboro Street area. On January 17th, the board held a work session on connectivity between Lloyd Street and North Greensboro Street. Due to absences that night and the board vacancy, it was decided to continue the work session at a later meeting. Staff recommends that the Board of Aldermen adopt the resolution receiving the report and providing guidance on the next steps. And Dale McKeel, our transportation planner, is at the podium to give you all an overview, since it's been a while since we've looked at this. Dale?
Good evening. I should also add that this is another follow-up item to the downtown circulation study. One of the recommendations of the circulation study was to look at this connectivity. And when we did a follow-up presentation last October, we recommended having a follow-up work session to discuss this connection. What we've seen in communities all across this country is the problems that result from a lack of connectivity. It normally starts out with unconnected streets requiring more trips to be made on arterials. Arterials are widened to handle increased traffic. The wider arterials further segment the community. Further, local streets do not connect to a variety of destinations. Increased distance discourages biking, walking, and transit, and the distances make some destinations inaccessible for non-drivers. In order to try to address this problem, many communities across the country have adopted plans and policies to promote increased street connectivity, including Carrboro, which first adopted these policies back in 1986, and the policy has been modified several times. In addition, in the late 1990s, the land use ordinance was modified to add some additional connectivity requirements, including the language, to the extent practical, all streets shall be interconnected, and also limits on cul-de-sacs. The existing connector roads policy was also incorporated into the Northern Study Area Plan. It's referenced in Vision 2020 with the statement the town should continue to implement its connector road policy. And overall, there has been a high level of commitment to implementing the connector road policy as growth has occurred in Carrboro. A 1997 overview of the Connector Roads Plan provided a good statement of the purpose for the plan. It said it was to ensure the old and new businesses would be connected to each other, both to disperse newly generated traffic and give a sense of unity to the town as it grows, and also made the statement that the roads in the plan were intended to provide a backbone for a more intricate grid of smaller connector roads. The existing connector road plan was in your packet. These are the maps from that plan. I won't spend a lot of time on these. I will point out that some of these existing connections, for example, the one down here where the new high school is being built, are have been implemented over the years. This is the plan in the northern part of the community. Many of you have seen this slide multiple times, but it bears showing just once more. At one time, there was only one connection along Cates Farm Road and Autumn Drive in Stratford between Homestead Road to the north and Hillsborough Road to the south. When there was a separate connection through Wyndham Drive, when this opened up, we saw increases along Wyndham Drive in the traffic, but significant decreases along Autumn Drive as that traffic was dispersed, and as there are more connections opened up through this area, we should see more of a dissipation or lack of concentration of traffic on any particular street as the traffic is dispersed. Per the literature there, benefits connectivity, decreasing traffic on arterial streets, walking, biking, and transit, reduced emergency response times and evacuation, improved evacuation routes, improved utility connections, more efficient trash and recycling collection, and lower vehicle miles traveled and fewer emissions as a result. Some of the negative effects of connectivity that are often cited in the literature include raising the levels of through traffic on existing residential streets, increasing infrastructure costs and impervious cover, requiring more land to develop the same number of units, decreasing housing affordability, and threatening profitability of developments. Additional observations, the connector roads help to disperse traffic, I already stated this, and promote the 2020 vision of not widening existing roads to provide additional lanes for automobiles. And Carrboro has promoted tools to mitigate the impacts of traffic through the traffic calming process. Now, to the specific area of discussion, the connecting street between Lloyd and Greensboro, as was discussed more thoroughly in your packet, this has been discussed several times over the past 25 years. A lot of the previous discussion focused on an extension of an existing street, Parker Street, across the railroad tracks to Lloyd. That extension is no longer feasible because of the construction of the health center. At one time, there was also discussion of extending Lloyd Street over to Estes Drive. The most recent discussions on this topic were in 1995, and currently Lloyd Street has about 2,200 vehicles per day. This is a map showing the area. This is the Parker Street extension, which at one time was looked at it, but is no longer feasible. Looking at this specific connection, I think the Lloyd-Greensboro connection could have many of the potential benefits and negative effects that were discussed previously. The benefits would include the better emergency access to this area, an alternative route for bikes, pedestrians, and vehicles. Negative impacts could include increased traffic and possible reduction in development potential of some properties. Possible alternatives, and I'll flip back and forth to a map to look at these. One would be a connection in the vicinity of Willard Street alternative, which was discussed previously in the early 90s, and it's in this area here. This street is located south. This proposed street would be located south of the Cedar Street condominiums, which are on North Greensboro Street. It would impact property where there's currently a Fitch Lumber storage area, as well as residences on the Greensboro side of the track. And it might also impact existing parking at the Piedmont Health Center. The second site is the connecting road using the Hosier Street and Railroad Spur, which was discussed in the downtown circulation study. This would be a connection in this vicinity using the existing railroad spur that comes over to Fitch Lumber. And then sort of coming around the backside of Carmel, of the Harris Teeter site, and connecting over to Hosier Street. This possible street would likely cross a portion of the Carmel Mall site, may require that a new spur line be built to serve Fitch Lumber, and the town has received a development application for property which is located directly north of Hosier Street on Lloyd Street.
Could you show where that would be? Just got to point, use the pointer.
There's currently the Piedmont Health Center property is sort of from here down. There's currently an undeveloped lot right here that is where there is a development proposal on Lloyd Street.
That's south of the Piedmont Health Center?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So would the development of that take up the part of the, I'm just trying to visualize in my head, could whatever the, I'm not making any because I haven't seen anything. So I'm just asking in sort of a general, would it take up, if something was developed there, then would you be able to put a connector road there?
Well, what was proposed in the downtown circulation study was to use the existing right-of-way from Hosier Street and connect over.
Okay.
Well, we'll say we haven't done an engineering design that would show that street, so the feasibility of that would still need to be, there would still need to be additional study of that.
Okay.
The third alternative is what I've called the Lloyd Mulberry connection. And this would not provide a direct connection between Lloyd and Greensboro streets. Instead, it would provide a connection through two residential streets, Mulberry Street and Pleasant Drive out to Greensboro. The town owns much of the right-of-way needed to make this connection, and the topography at this crossing may make it difficult and expensive. Some additional considerations. If the connector street is added to the plan, the land use ordinance would require the connector road be built as part of future development or redevelopment. There is existing development on some of the properties where a connecting street would be placed, and due to this existing development, it could be many years before the plan for a connecting road could be implemented. And in some ways, I think this is this situation could be similar to the one to the Merritt Mill Brewer Lane connector that we that was approved by the board last summer, where it was anticipated that there was a desire for a connector road in the future. The connector was added to the plan, even though it was anticipated it could be many years before that connector would actually be built. Staff recommendation is to adopt the resolution receiving the report and providing guidance on next steps. Some possible next steps would be to request the Transportation Advisory Board review one or more of the alternatives. Another important question would be to determine whether an at-grade crossing of the railway is likely to be approved by Norfolk Southern. If not, review the feasibility of crossing over or under the railway. A third possible next step would be to review the feasibility of bicycle and pedestrian-only connections between Lloyd and Greensboro. There's currently quite a bit of pedestrian traffic between Lloyd and Greensboro. And finally, schedule community meetings and opportunities for public comment on this.
Alderman Brown.
Yeah, I guess having... I think I was the person to ask for it to be delayed because I was could not come to the meeting. I guess my thinking is that I think we need more research, and I would like some response from our Transportation Advisory Board. I think I'm leaning more to bullets 1, 3, and 4. You know, many entities have been trying to work with Norfolk Southern for different things to do with that portion of the railway. And I think that would probably, 1, 3, and 4, we would get a better gauge of what people really wanted. I think that at the minimum, I think, and it may be at the maximum, that what people would want would be number 3, but I would rather talk to people about it before we make that kind of decision and do that kind of planning. So I would recommend to the board that we do 1, 3, and 4, but I mean that's...
I agree with that.
Let's just go straight down the table here.
On number 3, I agree with Alderman Brown. On number 3, can you remind me again, when I think of connectivity, I think of, you know, a great way to reduce trips and, you know, reduce emissions and at the same time look for ways to increase bicycle usage. As many of you guys heard today, you know, the Yellow Bike Program is going to become a reality very soon. But we need to update, I believe, our bicycle plan, right? How is the bicycle plan that we have?
It was first adopted in 1989.
1989.
It has been modified some since then.
So it's up for, it would be good to upgrade it to match our connectivity policy. And there is some, remind me again, there are some dollars, DOT dollars, right, that we can approach to do this, plus hopefully, I mean, to bring everything in compliance so up to date.
They do have a planning grant program where they will... provide grants to municipalities for local bicycle or pedestrian plans.
Okay. That's what I would like to recommend or ask the support is to, as we consider option three, that keep that in mind for the budget discussions, that to upgrade the bicycle updating
that's
plan.
That's a great point. Alex.
I think Joel made perfect sense. I'm just wondering, though, just in a reductive mode, whether it might not be worthwhile to go ahead and explore the whole Norfolk Southern issue, because if that makes it a non-starter at the get-go, mm-hmm. then we can just
drop it.
You know, then we are where we are. And no, so we have something to bounce off of neighbors. I'm not really sure about the sequencing as well, because it may very well be that conversations in the neighborhood will identify another non-starter. And,
well,
you know.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to put an order, I would do 1, 2, mm-hmm. then 3, and then, I mean, 1, excuse me. The first one would be bullet number 3.
Right.
I mean, bullet number 4. The second one would be bullet number 1, and the third one would be bullet number 3.
There you go.
4-1-3-2.
That sounds.
Is that it?
4-1-3-2.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Schedule a community meeting, and then request more research, and then review feasibility of bike and pedestrian only, and then determine at grade crossing.
Exactly.
Okay. That seems reasonable to me.
I would like to know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dan was next.
Yeah. Sorry, Randy.
That's all right.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to say something different than what I thought I was going to say and then get back to it. I mean, I disagree. I think we need more information for a community meeting because I don't think we know enough, and I'll explain more about that in a second. So I think the sequence, I actually think that 2 and 1 can happen simultaneously. I agree with Alex that there's no harm in asking the question of Norfolk Southern, and you know, and if it's a clear and definite no, then that's going to help us. If it's, you know, ambiguous or yes, then that tells us something else. But I think we ought to ask that question. You know, I would like, you know, I have some thoughts about these alternatives. For example, I would not be particularly interested in pursuing the Mulberry Pleasant alternative. Those are residential neighborhoods, and I see this as perhaps as soon as it's built, but certainly eventually being a very high traffic connector, and I don't think it needs to go there. And I would actually like to take that off the table, at least tentatively. You know, if we found at some point that none of the others were really tenable, we could go back to it. But I'd like to take that off the table, at least put that thought out for you all to consider. The other point that I'm particularly interested in more information on is the Hosiery Street connector, because I think, you know, on the one hand, and this was identified in the report, there are some potential advantages in redesigning the access to Harris Teeter parking lot through using that connector. But something that hasn't been discussed is I think there are some broader traffic management issues that come up with that route along North Greensboro, considering the proximity to Weaver Street and the fact that traffic already backs up going south on Greensboro past the tracks in the afternoon. And, you know, so I would like to hear more about the traffic management impacts of that particular route, and also the impacts on the how that fits in with possible changes to the Harris Teeter lot. And I think that that's information that would be helpful to a community meeting. That's why I think that should come first. So that's three ideas I put out, one about Norfolk Southern, one about the Mulberry Street, and one about more information on the Hosiery.
Randy.
That's what I was trying to say. I would like to see the inquiry about the Norfolk Southern first, because I think Alex is right. That is a linchpin, and that does either put Hosiery on the table or take it off. I think the question about the Hosiery Street development, what kind of development is going to go on. There is something else we need more information about as to the viability of that connector. I like what Dan had to say about the Mulberry Street Pleasant, because it is more of a neighborhood, and if we could or consider putting a hold on that, that makes sense to me too, which also raises the question of whether within the ovals that, that Dale delineated, if there are priorities, and maybe that should be part of what we look at before we would schedule meetings. So I would think doing one and two simultaneously and then looking at scheduling a meeting.
And just very briefly, the only thing is, though, that you have substantial landowners who own Carmel Mall and people around it, and I think you do need some input from the people who own the property that are, before we spend, have the TAB and other boards expend a lot of time on it. And I think we should get their input and the neighborhood's input first. I mean, we can provide a copy of the packet that we received, and they may have additional questions, and we may have additional questions, but I'm hesitant to say without talking to the, I mean, that's just my inclination. Now, maybe if they could run parallel, which may be difficult because we've got a lot on our plates, but I think that's important too. I know, you know, there's been no discussions with the people that own Fitch about that little change, and, you know, they are a long-term business, long-term history in the community. And I think we should get at least some initial, I thought I was going to sneeze, feedback from them.
Well, as you can see from this discussion, and all of us, and some of us old-timers can tell you from firsthand experience, that this is very challenging every time it comes up. Mm. There is has been over the years strong interest expressed by many of the neighbors in opening up a connection in some fashion or another. There are other neighbors who are very skeptical of the idea. But again, since it's been a while since this issue's been revisited, we don't know how that dynamic either is consistent or has changed. Just a couple things to note. In discussing the alternatives, there the more direct routes to South Greensboro serve sort of the traditional connectivity and traffic management goals, if you will. The potential connector to Mulberry fulfills the social connectivity aspects of the policy, which some refer to as social engineering and all that, but we won't even go there. ideology. In any case, but they actually fulfilled somewhat different parts of, or in emphasis, somewhat different parts of what the connectivity policy is or does. So those are things that we need to think about. I think Dan, that goes directly to Dan's point. In opening up connections between neighborhoods, which has typically been a difficult thing to do for a variety of reasons. I don't even know where I was going with that, except to the extent that...
some context.
Yeah, except to supply some context, and that we probably ought to just throw all these into the mix and start getting input. Or at least establishing a way that we're going to get input from the neighborhoods first before we do a lot of technical work, which I think is what Joel said far more effectively and less.
Let me jump in for a second. I guess my concern about this whole topic is that it's kind of topic that lends itself to getting people's blood pressure up quite a bit. I'm not sure what the right way to, I'm still thinking about what's the right way to approach it here, but I think no matter which of these various connection ideas you're talking about, that unless it's a bike and pedestrian connection only, it's going to be both quite controversial and very far off in the future in terms of it coming to fruition. And I just say that because I think, well, I mean, just what you're saying, Alex, it's like, how long has this general topic been under discussion so far? We'll just throw out there that one hesitation I have is I'm reluctant to spend a lot of time and effort on this topic and get a lot of people upset over a bunch of scenarios that are actually all either fairly unrealistic or else if they're ever to be implemented, it's to be far in the future. I just put that out there for thought. Jackie?
I fully agree with you, Mark. Thank you. I'm sitting here thinking that we're going through all this effort and energy to improve our economic situation downtown. And here we have one of the economic linchpins of Carrboro. Fitch, one of our major employers, one of our major, and they're just a great business. I can't imagine Carrboro without Fitch. I don't want to do anything or have Fitch read in the paper that we're considering doing something that's going to mess with their lumber yard. Why would we want to somehow upset at one of our best businesses that are downtown? I also don't want to do anything that's going to mess with Carmel. I mean, these are our two kind of solid rocks downtown and that help get everything started. I'm not hearing a great hue and cry for connection there. I understand some of the economic development reasons behind wanting to have connection there, but so far I'm not hearing any plan that's not happening. I know that the neighbors were, after 15 years of their working on it, they were finally delighted when we got the stoplight in that goes into that neighborhood. That and a pedestrian bike path connecting them with Carmel might be what they really want. And so I agree with Mark that I don't want to get the neighbors thinking something's going to happen when there's nothing coming down the pike anytime soon. And I certainly don't want to get Fitch and Carmel thinking that we're going to do something that could have an impact on how they use their property when there really isn't any reason. So I'm sorry I took so long in just saying I agree with you, Mark.
It's okay.
See, that's what I meant when I said the community meeting and finding out what they want before we do other things.
Yeah. Is that what held this up? I mean, this has been going on essentially since 1983. So in 20...
The challenges have involved various things. The challenges have been technical.
There are many things
we discussed. Property acquisition, you know, what...
So my question is, would it...
Right,
but would it help at this point, okay, so we can move in a different way than obviously over the last 23 years we're not really getting anywhere with this. It gets tabled every other time. Does it make sense to start with the community? I mean, is that something that has not happened before? Would that be a different approach?
I would always talk to the community.
Well, I didn't mean that we don't talk to the community, but in terms of how
we
do things, because obviously the reports... I've got four of them here, and they haven't changed much. But and it's really clear that four different times it's been tabled. And I'd like to have some clear direction, and if starting with the community would help provide that.
Well, not to open this up too much wider, but I guess my other question is, what is
why?
Who are we talking about when we say, you know, having a discussion with the community? Because not that there isn't anybody to discuss it with, but I just, it's a pretty wide open topic. A couple of people have said, and I don't really disagree with the point, that Pleasant Street and Mulberry Street are fundamentally, you know, they're basically residential streets. But I can tell you, having done a lot of work on Lloyd Street, that the people who live on Lloyd Street view Lloyd Street as a residential street too.
Yes.
And I know nobody was trying to imply otherwise, but...
But is it up to Hoser?
It's residential on one side, basically, all the way up to Cobb Street.
Could you please put the map back up?
That
might be helpful for this.
That shows a...
Here we're going to talk.
Okay.
It's residential all the way up to Cobb Street on the east side of the street.
But is it residential between Hosiery and Main on the east side? I mean, I know there's a body shop there and
between Hosiery and Main
on the west side.
On the east side. The west side, I know it's not residential.
This is all between Hosiery Street, all the way down to Cobb Street. Look where Cobb Street is.
Cobb
is further down below.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's residential.
Mm-hmm. On the east side.
East side of Lloyd.
The furniture the furniture doctor and
beyond.
And the body shop are the ends.
Yeah, that's
good ends at Cobb and Lloyd.
Right. Right.
Which is, those are old traditional businesses.
Right.
But there's also a natural corridor that's been created, foot and bike path, by the folks who are in the Lloyd Street neighborhoods to Carmel, that maybe that's a great indicator of the interest.
I think I've been trying to talk.
I'm sorry, John.
There's nothing wrong with gathering information, and I agree with Jackie that we should not scare anybody, but it could be that they might even see a potential, something that will add value to the property or something they haven't thought about it. I mean, having a discussion with them and say, look, we believe that our connectivity roads policy is a good one. If it's not, then we need to change it.
But why do you use the weed there?
And sooner or later, traffic will, it is an issue, traffic there. Also, we know things take time, right? It took 15 years to get a light. Who knows how many years it's going to take to get something else in there. But unless we don't have all the alternative transportation, we will. We have to find ways to decongest that area, or as Alderman Saffron says, congestion is good also, right? To push people to do the right things. Chapel Hill is already planning the greenways and bikeways and connected roads, so I hope we design ours before they design theirs so that they make sure we match with their stuff. And I think there is already a natural path there that kind of seems logical for us to connect and make sure that we is part of our planning. But I don't see any controversy on going and meeting and getting that information and asking those folks, Carmel Mall and Fitch, to see what they think about this, because it could actually add value to their long-term vision,
And if they don't, if they say no, it's no, we can go on and just put the bike path in.
Well, the Nate.
Okay, so let's look at the next steps and make a proposal, because.
I think Mark raises a very good point in that you don't want to put clearly defined alternatives out there for people to get upset about.
Or
excited.
Get excited about uncertainty? I know I do.
Yeah.
Well, let me propose this.
Mm-hmm.
We seriously review the feasibility of the bike and pedestrian connection between Lloyd and Greensboro Street, because I think I hear a consensus about on the board about looking at that. And then second, to do more research on the alternatives in terms of cost and feasibility, and to contact those larger
landowners
to see if they even care. And then if they do or have an opinion one way or the other, then that would be brought back to us to determine whether or not there's a necessity to schedule a community meeting and opportunities for public comment.
Do I hear a second for that?
Second.
Okay.
Can I ask a question there? Because I think how the question is posed can affect the answer that we're going to get. Because, we don't know what the connections are going to look like, and we don't know if it might... Harris Teeter, the idea of a road running through part of Carmel there might offhand sound bad, but if there was an idea of something that was actually going to improve their traffic flow, they might like it.
Well,
so I think, I don't think it's as black and white as, we don't want to imply to them that it's necessarily black and white, when it could be, you know, variegated.
I think, though, you would need to have do more research on what the alternatives would be to present them with something, because I don't think we have any firm sort of how it would work. I mean, there's sort of a general little picture about how it works, but I do think you could pose the question of what have you been thinking about? Have you even thought about having a change in access to your properties? And if you were thinking about a change in access to your properties, what would you be thinking about with those changes? Because I know they're businesses, and they'd be thinking about how can we make, you know, how could our business be better if these changes occur? Mm-hmm. And who would be responsible for paying for those changes? So I think you need to have at least that sort of base information. I mean, if you would pose it like that, they could give you some general ideas, then you'd have to do more research to react to that.
And Joel has keyed in on something that's really very important that we haven't really discussed here, which is that we don't know who's going to build whatever facility might take place. It might be us. It might be NCDOT. It also might be that whatever corridor and whatever facility, if there is one, would be developed by whoever happens to develop the parcel.
Right.
So what we're talking about now is just exploring potential corridors and then exploring the potential scope. And a lot of what's going to inform that is what the folks in Lloyd Broad Street neighborhood have to say. The interest that they brought forward years ago was that the neighborhood felt isolated,
right,
and that this was a way for the neighborhood to interconnect with the rest of the community physically, as well as just the convenience of not having to deal with that crap in downtown, which hopefully is dealt with to some degree by the signal. But I think that the interconnectivity with the surrounding neighborhoods was an important point. Is it still important? I don't know. Crap, we haven't talked about this in how many years? So we need to have that conversation again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the kind of information. I don't think anyone on staff or on the board is sort of clued into this connection has to look like that, and I think we do need more information. So my proposal is to get more information, as well as, I think, like I said, I heard a consensus about at least the bike and the pedestrian connection between Lloyd and Greensboro Street.
Sounds good.
Okay. I thought it sounded like a pretty good motion, and this is certainly plenty of time for a moment to have spent on this matter.
Yes.
Was it seconded?
The manager
has
an issue.
Question.
The only thing I would ask, particularly for the clerk, if you could restate the motion so we know exactly what it is
You
all want us to do.
That's
because
what
you
the
talked about two or three things. You may know, but we're a little lost.
Midling's got
you
it.
Think we aren't?
The first portion of the motion was to review the feasibility of the bicycle and pedestrian only connections between Lloyd and Green Street. The second portion was to request more research, I guess from staff and TAB, about the alternative connections, but in that gaining more research include discussions with the property owners of Carmel Mall and Finch Lumber, not to say this is where the connections would be, but have very open and broad questions in terms of do you want a different sort of configuration? And if you did, what would it look like? So
Or possibly even to just as a matter of brainstorm for a moment. I think one of the points that would be interesting to discuss with the property owners between Greensboro Street and the railroad right of way is, you know, how could a connection through here benefit?
Right,
as a property owner, and what would that, you know, what would it look like, or whatever? And you know, to put things kind of in that
or
context,
altering access.
What Dan was getting at before. Okay.
Was there a point about the question to Norfolk Southern?
Right.
Joel,
that's included.
That's included.
I'm just going to write them again.
I got that out of that.
Okay, I wasn't sure I did, so I appreciate you asking.
I think it amounted to taking step number 3 on that list, and then followed by Port of 1 and 2 together, including a discussion with relevant landowners between the railroad and Greensboro Street? And then item 4, if it, we'll get back to that question of whether we need to go to that step.
Right.
But if something's to happen, then we'll need to go to that step, and if nothing's to happen, then we won't. Okay. All those in favor?
That included the, what Mr. Stewart just asked about Norfolk Southern.
Right.
That's item 1 and 2.
I just want to be sure.
So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Thank you very much. Very good discussion. Item D, 4, so many attachments in this one. Okay. Oh, item D4, yes. Response to the Town of Chapel Hill's Apple Chill event.
Town of Chapel Hill's annual Apple Chill event, as you all know, draws a high volume of people that impacts the town of Carrboro. The event is scheduled for April 23rd, 2006. Staff will share several options to address the overall impact of this event so that hopefully it will benefit both the town and our neighbors. And in an effort to complete that plan of action, we're asking you all for some guidance. And Captain Joel Booker is here to share some of the options that we've come up with. Chief Hutchison and also Anita Jones-McNair, our Recreation Parks Director, here, as well as resource folks. So, Joel, if you want to come up.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
How's your car doing?
It's really neat.
Was it?
I appreciate y'all giving me again an opportunity to address the board. I've spoken before many of you before, and for the new members, I appreciate the opportunity as well, and welcome on board. I just listened to some of the banner that was going on, and things were said like business impact in the community, community impact, traffic flow, uncertainty creates anxiety, and then Alderman Zaffron said that something to the effect that he had been here for a long time, so we'll talk about historical value as well. Regarding Apple Chill, hope you don't mind, I'll refer to my notes. The event, the size and of the event has expanded out from the downtown area of Chapel Hill to where it truly impacts the downtown area of Carrboro. The number of people basically spill over. When they set up a perimeter and everybody cannot get into their perimeter, in essence, we become part of that perimeter, particularly up around the Merritt Mill Road, East Main Street, Rosemary Street area.
Could you give a little more detail about what you mean by when they set up a perimeter?
The perimeter for their event, I think, starts in the area of Moorhead Planetarium with booths and things like that. Once you get to that point on the east end of Chapel Hill, it's pretty much blocked off. Then they create a traffic plan if you're in a vehicle that diverts you around that area and basically comes back around Rosemary Street up to about the Graham Street area. Used to be that it was closer into the Columbia Street area, but now coming out to Graham Street, because of the size of the crowd, pushes it closer to the Carrboro city limit. So we see an impact from that. To give you an idea of the number of officers they're bringing in and total number of officers to work this year, we've been told 220 officers will work that area that I just described. So I appreciate the questions. Any questions, please jump in. That's a lot of law enforcement officers to work that particular event. The time of the event is also impacting in that it starts earlier and earlier in the year as far as its setup, and it's lasting longer and longer into the evening. That doesn't count the recreation and parks people that they have involved with this event that day, their fire department personnel, their public works personnel, and members of the EMS. For us, the traffic flow getting into Carrboro's downtown area, coming in from the west, headed east into Chapel Hill, once it gets to Merritt Mill Road, basically, it is gridlocked. And over the years, that has expanded further and further out. I know Mr. Stewart had mentioned in some of the meetings we've had to try to discuss what our plan might be. He was in the downtown area last year, and I don't recall the time, but certainly he can speak to the impact of the traffic. Now, if this is traffic coming into town to do business here, I think we would all say this is wonderful. they're coming through town to get to Chapel Hill, and it's total gridlock. It's bogged down. If the fire department needed to get into the East Main Street area about the railroad tracks for fear of a structure fire, there's gridlock. So we have to look at it in terms of public safety in that aspect. The businesses, I don't know exactly what impact this is having on our businesses. Again, I don't think people are patronizing them, but they're using the parking lots from our businesses to park because that's as close as they can get to this event, and then they go on foot into Chapel Hill as best that they can. I know that we had issues last year with our park, Anderson Park, on the outskirts of town. I know Ms. Anita Jones-McNair can speak more to that. But it had a group that came out, used the park. I think there was a rental to a certain area of the park. But people from Carrboro basically couldn't get in and out of the park once all these folks got in. It wasn't a troubled event, but it just impacted us in that our folks in Carrboro could not use our park for a pretty long period of the day. In Carrboro, we can get for Apple Chill Sunday about 22, maybe 23 officers in. We have a race that day, the duathlon that starts out at McDougal's. So several of us, four of us, will be in to work that starting at about 7:30, and we'll probably be here 12, 14 hours that day ourselves. We'll try to bring in a second wave of officers about midday when we understand Chapel Hill kicks off the second portion of this event, and that will kind of impact us because a lot of people will be trying to get there. And then we're being told at 6 p.m. they'll go through like they do on Halloween and sort of do the shoulder tap and say it's been wonderful, but the day is done. That's a good thing if everybody decides to go home at that time, but when they do, then the outpouring of people leaving town is going to, again, have a tremendous impact on us, traffic flow, foot traffic, et cetera. So that's why we've got to look at maybe bringing officers in either 2 to 3 stages, and we're talking about 12, 14-hour days for many of these officers in Carrboro. Planning options for us, first is reactive. We bring these officers in, and we do it in stages. We deploy them sort of on an as-needed basis. If we've got a lot of foot traffic downtown, if we've got folks taking over parking lots, then we try to get teams of officers there to correct that situation and move them along. Although with traffic build up, I don't know exactly where we would move them along to. In recent years, we've sent officers to CHPD. We're not doing that this year to the Chapel Hill Police Department. We've actually sent them officers to help in this number of 220. But over the last few years, the impact, the growth of this, we can't do that anymore. We're trying to be a good neighbor, but we can't send them help that we feel like we're going to need on the home front ourselves. In a more proactive way, and I think there's different stages, and I feel like this is maybe where we need, you know, the guidance from the board. We can try to set up a traffic plan that continues to move traffic to some extent, although I think in truth it is going to really bog down even with officers at intersections, directing traffic, controlling light heads, and then we lose the opportunity to put those officers in parking lots in our community over just in this Broad Street area where people want to go and go into the park and try to park their vehicles and stuff because we feel like they need our protection to move these folks along. They don't live there. They're just parking in their neighborhoods. Help there would be from the recreation and parks with signage that we can put on the western end of town, hopefully to direct people who want to come into the area to go to Apple Chill to exits that get them into Chapel Hill. Additionally, we can beef that up by posting officers at some of the intersections on the western end of town where they come into town. But that starts to spread our resources thin when we do that. And it also takes those officers out of the downtown area where we feel like we need to have teams of foot officers. Chapel Hill says if we have issues in the downtown area, they'll send us by teams of four some of their foot officers. But I don't think we need to sit back on our laurels and kind of depend on that. Again, the diversion of traffic, depending on what extent y'all feel like is most appropriate, and the reason we say that is if we say local traffic only, then that's pretty much we're going to stick with it. If people say, well, I'm coming in to go to a certain restaurant or I'm coming in to go to, We don't know that for sure. If they don't have a license that shows that they live on Lloyd Street or Broad Street or something, then I think our hesitancy would be to allow them to come because it's just going to be like opening the floodgates. We don't want to take away from our downtown merchants, and we don't want to detract from the Apple Chill event, but we cannot experience but so much more pressure from that event and effectively do what we need to do to serve the community. Yes, ma'am.
You're talking about after Chill as well as Apple Chill, right? Because as a downtown resident, my experience, I remember last year we went to Weaver Street to pick up some dinner and ate on the lawn of Weaver Street. We noticed a car that had very, very cool rims. And we talked to the young men about the rims, and we had this really good conversation. Then we went and had some dinner and had some wine. And then we went to walk home. That car had moved less than half a block during the time that we had had dinner. And it was just, there wasn't any place for them to go. And we saw kids coming in, and then you'd see this look on their face like, oh, no, we're stuck. And that was in the after chill. Perfectly fine people, I mean, just college kids, and it was fine, but just stuck. I don't know how we deal with that. And it seems to me, if I remember right, that this went on till 11 o'clock at night. So it's not just while the little street fair is going on. So is that what you're talking about, having to plan for? And then the motorcycle group that comes through. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. And it does go on for extended periods of time. It seems to get longer and longer every year. And, again, once they sort of shut down Apple Chill, the event of Apple Chill, then the after chill portion of it is the ride
that's
and the cruising.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, that's
what we're talking about.
I was at
about.
The Spotted
yeah.
Dog maybe at the same mm-hmm. time you were and walking, but there was just absolute gridlock so that nobody was going
it
anywhere.
Was scary.
And I noticed a few folks were getting a little hot under the collar.
Gridlock in both directions? Or?
Just the whole downtown,
yeah,
just locked down.
You just couldn't move if you were in a vehicle.
That's right.
And that's why, I mean, it's sort of like the natural geography. There's only a couple of ways in and a couple of ways out.
I would also recommend, I know I did this last year, was getting the word out about the Jones Ferry Road, the bus lots.
Parking
because
ride.
That worked out beautifully. Caught the bus down there and didn't have to worry about it. And I don't know if a lot of people realize how absolutely convenient and quick that shuttle system is. Especially the folks in Carver.
But a lot of people don't want to cruise on a bus.
It's a little hard.
Buses you know? Sort of eliminate the cruise aspect.
Yeah, it would, yeah. The rims aren't that good, you know. It's like,
but so they're friendly to putting bicycles
neon
in the front.
Out underneath
they're not real
it.
Good about motorcycles.
That's right. So. That's
but during the day for families, it really
yeah, for them it's better.
It was great. Yeah.
So other than Weaver and Main Street, are there other areas where you see a problem?
54.
Our traffic backs up all the way at least to Greensboro, and we're talking bumper to bumper, not moving.
Uh-huh.
Coming up South Greensboro Street, Merritt Mill, anything from those two blocks all the way to Chapel Hill, I think she's adequately described it. When you say you go and you have a meal and you come back and the car's moved a few feet, that's a pretty accurate description of how this traffic flows.
Great for air quality.
Well, Alex. And then John.
Well, Joel, just, I mean, obviously this is a new animal that you're dealing with in terms of trying to step up your response to a situation that we all recognize has gotten out of control in terms of our ability to just control the traffic. So which of the options that you are discussing do you think would have the greatest impact, yet still provide you with enough resources to do what you have to do?
I think probably what we would like to try to do is start off in a state of preparedness to put a total flow around town as best we can with the resources we have. But we may start off less restrictive with that and see what develops as it goes. If we can get adequate signage to get folks to follow the route to go around us, and that's working, then I say, you know, let it go like that, because then we can keep teams of officers on foot patrol in the downtown area because there's going to be pedestrian traffic. If we find out that not staffing some of these intersections, people don't follow the signage and feel like they know a shortcut, or just lose their way or just follow the car that's in front of them, and they end up in our downtown area and it backs up, then I think we have to try to at least be ready to shut it down to where they can't just get in the car. Now, there's still going to be folks that get in. I mean, we can't stop everybody. It's not Dodge City. We can't just stop everybody from getting into town. We're a little big for that. But if we can try to control it to that extent, the thing that we don't want to do from town staff is give the feeling that we're shutting town down so that merchants here who do businesses on Sunday, you know, start losing business. We don't want to be part of the responsibility for that. But if they're concerned about folks parking in their parking lots and trashing the place up, Public Works has to come in and do a cleanup. If we say we're going to start off with the most restrictive, then I think we would want to communicate with those merchants and say, we're going to limit what gets downtown. They may choose to close that day during those hours. If they do that, then they could rope their parking lots off. Then we can act as an agent and limit some of the parking that is done in their parking lots. I mean, it's just depending on sort of, and that's what we're looking for direction from the board as to what do y'all think is most appropriate for the community, the businesses, the traffic flow, et cetera.
I would just follow up by saying I think that given what's been described here, that some level of diversion is obviously called for, that we've reached that point. That my inclination is that you obviously start with the friendly diversion and try to keep as flexible as you can and be prepared to ramp it up if as necessary, but to give you folks the great flexibility that you need to do what you think you need to do to control the situation.
Let me ask you a question. The number one cost, who pays for the extra officers we need to put? The Chapel Hill absorbs any of that cost? Or we just, it's part of our mutual support agreement that we support each other when we need each other and we absorb that cost, or do we get any reimbursement for that? That's one question. The other one is, what are the statistics on accidents? I mean, how many fires have we had in the area where potentially might be affected if our fire engines cannot get in there, or crimes have happened? Do we have any of those statistics that will tell me that it's a public safety issue, that there's a precedent? If there's not a precedent, you know, I mean, I've had organized festivals before, started La Fiesta del Pueblo a long time ago, and I know that, I mean, it's good. It's good for business to bring people in, but not all people who come in is good for the business either. But the ways to remedy that, I would like to know, what are the parking strategies that Apogeo has? I mean, these folks are pros at this stuff, and I'm sure they have been, I hope they are pro, just like you are thinking proactively. How are they going to cope with this current increase on flows? I mean, we organize the festival, in Chapel Hill, and every year they ask us, you need to hire more police officers, you need to find additional parking spots, you need to provide shuttle buses, and we absorb all that cost. So, and we pay, you know, top dollar for, when you try to get as many rookies as possible, so you keep your cost down, but we absorb, the organizers of the event absorb every single cost that any town will incur. So, I mean, sounds like this is an issue. I mean, you guys are pros at finding ways to direct traffic, but I'm not convinced that, I mean, if the statistics are there, that is truly, you know, we couldn't turn around, I mean, the crime or fire or a hazard is there, that there's no way for us to get there in a timely fashion way. I mean, I think it's sort of like, it's the part of doing business in a college town or living in a beach town, you know, Myrtle Beach or whatever. You get everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think if it's one day a year, and this is something that promotes community and builds community and brings visitors from other parts of town, that, I mean, I know that it brings you know, all community members who probably had moved to Durham and other towns, and this is the only time of year they come in to visit their family members and hang out. And, you know, if it's one time a year and it's not a real public hazard, you know, I think I'm okay writing it out. But if it is, I want to be convinced.
Well, it's becoming more than one time a year. This is not the only event in Chapel Hill. Apple Chill is one of the events that has probably the most impact. But Halloween has a significant impact. The fall festival. I would venture to say there's not a lot of positive impact for the merchants in downtown Carrboro. And Chief Hutchison and I met last year with the chief and the town manager in Chapel Hill and talked about the events that happened last year. And I think while they're sensitive to it, like my primary responsibility is for the town of Carrboro, theirs is for Chapel Hill. So they're going to do what they need to do to deal with Chapel Hill, and we're going to have to deal with the spillover. It's their festival, and they've got more room to deal with it than we do. And I would just say, you know, Chief Crabtree is here. And we can certainly get statistics about what kind of fires might be downtown and so forth, but I'm not sure that's important to know, because the reality is if there's a fire down there, if there's never been one in the last 100 years, right, and we can't get to it,
yeah,
it's a big deal.
I mean, we certainly bend over backwards to make sure Carrboro Day doesn't have a negative impact, right, on them, yeah.
And we organize many events, music festival, the various races, Carrboro Day, and those are relative to our size. And our,
yeah.
We can do the music festival with 10 officers the whole day. And we're talking about needing twice that many because Chapel Hill's having an event. So,
Does the traffic diversion include maybe having dividing up the streets one way in opposite directions? Has any thought been given to that to change the flow?
We have not. I think what we would look at first would be, and I believe it was 2001 when Chapel Hill thought they were going to try to control Halloween a bit more, there was a loop put around it, and the two agencies did that jointly. I think first that the chief and Captain Caldwell and I would look at that plan and see how it might benefit us.
Right.
I think this thing may grow over the years. Their plans have changed based on the impact and the size of the event, and that's exactly what's happening to us. Our plan used to be to go help them. Now it's impacting us to a point where we've got to establish and develop a plan that meets our needs right here. So some of the questions you have, in truth, we don't know because we don't have a frame of reference at this point on the impact.
Joel.
Well, I'm going to put forth this sort of idea. I think, one, signage. I think that the diversion should meet sort of the safety and public safety concerns. So you may want to try least restrictive to more restrictive, depending upon how, you know, I mean, I know there's got to be a certain point in the middle where you say, okay, we need to be more restrictive, and then see how you'll just have to be more restrictive. I mean, that's, you know, I can speak to having a difficulty getting out of my church,
yeah,
on Sunday because St. Paul is partially in Carrboro, majority of it's in Chapel Hill. We're right on North Merritt Mill Road. You can only go out two ways. You're either going to go out Merritt Mill Road or you're going to go to Rosemary and try to get out. And we have to have somebody in the church parking lot so that people can park for church. So, you know, I'm well aware of sort of the problems that ensue from people from Apple Chill. And I'm not complaining about Apple Chill because the kids and I and Jonathan go to Apple Chill. So, I would just say try it that way first, and then, you know, if things change, you have to be more restrictive, I think. That would be my proposal. I would say that they are going to have to bring in the police officers they need. I mean, I think that's without question, and we'll just have to absorb it in the budget. It's, you know, one of those things that occurs.
Well,
I don't know.
We're
how
not
we can
opposed to, if the board would agree to this, to at least having a conversation with Chapel Hill,
right,
about the possibility of some sort of reimbursement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ain't got a problem with that either.
I think that was just approved. Dan and then Jackie.
I don't think that we have the information to, you know, evaluate or even make any particular, put any points out in terms of how to restrict access. So I guess what I'm wondering is, do you all have a plan in mind for how you would go about doing that? I mean, for, what is it, you know, less than 3 weeks from now, 3 weekends from now, you know, if we get that, you know, is there something you would do this year in terms of restricting mobility that would improve the situation that, you know, you're interested in putting before us?
So far, we've looked at Merritt Mill Road in particular. Any traffic coming into town headed east when it gets up to the border where it sort of stops, to keep routing traffic down Merritt Mill Road, we may open up two lanes and try to run two lanes constantly down and around. If you live in Carrboro at that point, you would have stopped at a business or stopped at your home, et cetera. If you're going to Chapel Hill, then it just diverts you around to their city. We're talking about stopping traffic from getting off Highway 54 at Merritt Mill Road so that we can continue to run that traffic. Additionally, we're looking at staffing South Greensboro Street at Merritt Mill Road and trying to restrict some of the traffic that's either trying to get onto Merritt Mill Road from that point headed back up the hill or restrict traffic trying to get up South Greensboro Street. That's a very narrow road for that volume of traffic. That tends to want to come up and then get on either East Main Street or Weaver Street at that point trying to get into Chapel Hill. Again, if you live locally, you're welcome to come up there, but if you're not local, we would try to restrict that. The other area that we would need to look at is coming in on Highway 54 and getting off at Jones Ferry Road or West Main Street so that we can try to reduce some of the pressure we experience of traffic coming in from our west trying to get over to their event. Those are just some off the cuff. I think we've got to look at trying to prevent traffic from getting down into the Lloyd Broad Street area. As traffic backs up, what happens is people obviously start looking for somewhere to park, and I think we need to try to protect the community in that area as far as becoming a parking lot and the businesses. Those are just some kind of off the cuff, if that helps you, sir.
It does, because I guess, you know, my feeling is that you know, as has been said, we're in a what's basically an untenable situation. So we're not going to do anything, I don't think, that's going to make it worse. And, you know, given the time frame we're in, I mean, I feel like I would support anything that the police department wants to do, you know, on a trial basis this year to try and improve the situation. And then we'll have some information to look at, you know, more closely perhaps later on to make some more careful evaluation.
Okay. Well, if I can add just one more to that one specifically, coming in on Estes Drive at Greensboro, traffic trying to turn left and come back to the south. We know traffic backs up sometimes for this on Airport Road, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, all the way back to Interstate 40. So once they get up to Estes, they try to turn, and that brings a large volume too. That may be a spot that we look at trying to divert traffic other than local traffic.
Jackie, and then
I had a question about how you would restrict people. Are you talking about setting up like a roadblock and checking everybody's license?
First, the signage, which would divert them around town. For folks who chose not to follow the signage, maybe they live in Carrboro, certainly if they approached an officer at that intersection and said, you know, I live at, and they give us, because we're going to recognize the street names. The officers are going to be alert to that and welcome them right in, but it doesn't mean the next 28 cars behind them bumper to bumper are going to be able to follow. So, again, people will slip by.
So the onus would be on the driver to approach the officer and say, hey, but I live on Lloyd Street.
Yes,
rather than the officers stopping cars, maybe even at random, and saying, do you live in Carrboro? So it would be the first. It would be, in order to come through, they'd have to approach you. And so how would people know that they were able to do that? My other fear is that the kids get their cars all done up to come cruise.
So it's real easy to tell which kids, you know, like my 15-year-old Saturn doesn't look like it's about ready to go cruising.
I'll say.
Thank you.
You could cruise if you want to.
Yeah, but my stepkids have great cars. But anyway, so I would be worried about officers well-intentionally kind of saying, hey, that one has these cool rims, or that one's bouncing, or that one's nice and shiny. You know, it's too good-looking a car to be in Carrboro. I'm worried about that.
And if I could address that, I actually think if I understood Officer Booker's proposal that the method he's using would help to ensure that we don't slip into that kind of we don't put ourselves in the position of having to make those kind of decisions, because the point is that if Lloyd Street is essentially blocked. That is actually legitimately somewhere you need to go. If you live on Lloyd Street, you'll stop and say, hey, what's the deal? I need to get through. At that point, they'll probably say, do you live down here? And they'll say, yeah. And they'll say, well, go on through.
Okay.
And obviously some people are just going to lie or whatever. But mostly people who don't have any business down there won't try.
And the signage would speak to that. Again, local traffic only. If you're local, then people would have an idea. It's difficult for us to start stopping every vehicle that comes up, because then it sort of turns into like a checkpoint, and we don't want to go down that road.
Right. Yeah, we get into dangerous territory with that.
I would recommend letting people in Carrboro know what the plan is, so that folks in Carrboro can get back and forth to Chapel Hill relatively easily through the radio station, through the newspaper. So in addition to signage through the website, getting the word out what the plan is ahead of time, so Carrboro folks like myself, who, will be going, knows which streets are cut off and what the plan is.
Okay.
And we would certainly try the information blitz, but I think many people, particularly in the downtown area, over the years have seen it grow the same way we have.
It's huge.
And sort of have some idea of.
Yeah.
Oh, I know there'll be a lot of support on Lloyd Street for what we were just discussing.
I trust you will do the right thing, but, we just take for granted, and we assume everybody speaks English, and you might be some people who say, necesito doblar aquí en Lloyd Street a la mano derecha porque voy a visitar a mi tía, and you're going to ask him, do you live here? And they're probably going to say, no, voy a visitar a mi tía Ana, que vive en Lloyd Street. So,
identification.
That would be, that's right. I know. Yeah, I'm very proud of our chief and many police officers who speak Spanish, but I know, I think common sense. I mean, the folks from the community and
okay. Mark, was there a citizen who wanted to?
Yeah, there was. I'm sorry. Bob Kirshner is here to speak on this and one other item.
I don't mind sitting down.
Hi, I'm Bob Kirshner. I'm resident here, and I just had a couple of thoughts, brainstorming thoughts on this. One of which was, I know this has become a big event, and maybe it's becoming time that maybe Carrboro needs to benefit from this and make it part of their plans too, make it part of their festival, and at least get some benefit out of the deal here instead of just dealing with an overflow. We need to set some booths and.
We're going to hold a toll booth. We'll hold Carrboro Day all up and down one side of Maryland Road.
Storytelling over here. Yeah. I'm sure they'll just flock.
But to help some of the people that have parking lots here that may be afraid that people are just going to take over and they're not going to have control of it, maybe we could authorize them. Well, on that day, they can charge for parking for non-Carrboro residents. Get some benefit out of the usage of their lots. Again, advertising, parking lot lots, and the use of that. Are we at a point now, maybe we need to consider, and I know it's spending our money doing this, but is it time to consider maybe through a mutual aid or just hiring external police officers to assist us in our roles on these particular days? And again, that would draw back to the question of approaching Chapel Hill again for helping to offset some of these costs.
All right.
Now, I don't know if that's a feasible idea or not, but that's a brainstorm.
Those are helpful thoughts, and I think that the former idea is an interesting one, but that we probably don't have time to implement this year, but it's something that we can certainly look at. But that second point, I think that was a point that Joel was making, that I think there's probably broad agreement that we need you to we need y'all out there, and if y'all need help out there, we're not eager to part with the money, we're willing to make sure the staffing resources are there. And I think just generally to sum up the other thing we heard here, and I take it you're looking mostly for some philosophical perspective on how to deal with this. What you're hearing here from the board is in part that we're real comfortable with the kind of approaches that you're talking about taking, but we also want you to be extremely sensitive to making sure that you're putting into place a set of policies that are truly uniform, that are, you know, culturally sensitive, and that don't leave room for interpretation about whether an officer was exercising some sort of inappropriate discretion in making a decision, and especially the more so if you're gonna, if in fact at some point this year or in future years you do end up needing to bring some officers in who don't regularly work for our department. So I think that's what does that mm-hmm. sum it up. All right, with that, let's turn to our
we
next.
We don't need a resolution. Okay.
No, I don't think actually.
Why don't we just check in with Joel and Carol and Steve, just make sure that that's adequate direction. Is that adequate direction for you guys? Okay.
Carolyn, you and Joel, okay?
Okay. I will say that Apple Hill is not the only place where cruising goes on in North Carolina. If you ever get a chance to visit Ashe County in Jefferson, North Carolina, every Friday and Saturday night, there is cruising.
Is that where you-
In the summertime.
With what a really good set of rims costs, it's going to be more than just Apple Chill. Okay.
Thank you for putting up with Apple Chill.
All right. Mr. Manager, we are on to item D5.
Okay. Item D5 is a request to set a public hearing for temporary closing of the 100 block of Weaver Street on Sundays. And the purpose of this agenda item is for the Board of Aldermen to consider setting a public hearing for the temporary closing of the 100 block of Weaver Street from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Sundays in conjunction with the Weaver Street Market event called Sunday Brunch and More. Specific Sundays for the closing are to be determined by the Board. And if I could just mention, normally we would do, setting a public hearing as a consent agenda item, but because this is really a private event, and the town doesn't typically incur the kind of cost that we've outlined for you in the agenda abstract, we thought it was important that you all perhaps have a conversation about whether you want to even take the step of setting a public hearing or not on this activity. George Size is here, and, of course, the chief and the captain are here if you all need to ask questions about the estimated cost and so forth.
Before we go there, actually, Bob Kirshner also signed up to speak on this, and let's just hear from him real quick, and then we'll have our discussion.
Bob Kirshner again. Thank you very much. First of all, I just want to briefly state that I'm here as an example that anybody in the community can come and talk to this board at any time.
Thank you, Bob.
As this board knows, I've been dealing with him for many years now, just approaching him with some of my ideas and my opinions, and they've been gracious enough to keep on hearing me. On this particular subject, I'm a little not quite sure what the intent of having the town involved with closing the street or what they wanted. I see that there might be some – what I perceived of what I read sounded like they want to be some assistance with the activity that's going on in front of – with the music activity going on in front of Weaver Street Market there. And maybe some community building, et cetera, which is, I think, some very admirable goals on this and in the right heart with this board. However,
what I was reading, this is a private event. It's not a town event, as being pointed out. And I feel, in my opinion, I need to raise a point of fiduciary duty. And then and in the close of the town taking the cost and even considering closing this street for a private event that's benefiting a business entity and is not a direct benefit of need to the all of Carrboro. I raise the question whether it's even the right use of our funds. And it's not the budget is not just something you want to do projects with. It's all of our money that we're spending on to support a particular entity that's making money off of this event. But I think the regulations that are in place are there appropriate that if they need to have the street closed, they should need to contribute toward this. So that's a point I wanted to raise on this, in consideration. What is your fiduciary duty in the spending of our money for a private event? And it almost seems to me that might even help you decide whether you even want to proceed with this plan at all. Thank you.
I'm not going to ask him a question. I was going to ask the attorney.
All right. Well, let's just briefly, if you can do that.
Do you know that, I'm talking about Weaver Street Cooperative?
What you're talking about in this plan here was in support of a Sunday event where they play music at their green.
At Weaver Street Cooperative, right?
At the cooperative, right. That's right.
But you know that Weaver Street Cooperative is a non-for-profit institution.
It is still a private business entity, and it's not a town entity.
It's not a town, that's right, but it's a non-for-profit.
Well, I live in a homeowners association, and we're a non-profit as well, so it's, but it'd be inappropriate for us to come to you and say, can you send us 20 police officers because we want to have a party on one of our streets?
Well, if you go ahead and hold the party and get wild enough, we'll send 20 officers.
And we won't mind.
I have a point of question.
Yes.
My husband, no, actually to the attorney. I'm sorry, Bob.
That's okay.
Thank you.
My husband and I are members of Weaver Street Co-op. So can I participate in the conversation?
Who on this board is members of Weaver Street Co-op?
Are you a member of the
club? So
don't ask the next question. Let me get an answer from the attorney, please. Thank you. He hadn't answered my question.
Oh, I thought he did.
No.
Well, I didn't hear the question yet.
Was
there a conflict of interest?
Is there a conflict?
Oh, no, I said no, there's not a conflict of interest. I think he said yes, you can participate, no conflict of interest.
Okay, then.
Thanks.
I just wanted to be sure.
Okay. Dan.
Okay, I have 3 points. And one is, I don't think we should pay for this, and I don't think we should hold a public hearing. Second point is, I think we should send the information to Weaver Street Market so they can know what's involved, and if they want to pursue it further, they can approach us. Mm-hmm. Third is, I want to suggest, included in that, what I think, and staff can comment on this, is a somewhat simpler and less expensive alternative. And what I have in mind is, rather than closing Weaver Street entirely, closing the eastbound direction. And what we would do is where, over by Spotted Dog at that intersection there, we would actually close what's normally the westbound lanes, and we keep off the parking and route the westbound traffic into where the parking usually is, using a fairly narrow row there as traffic calming, and then once you get past the crosswalk, so you're actually past where the event is taking place, the barriers would conduit back onto the normal westbound lane. So that basically all you need is a barrier at each end on the east end that basically channels westbound traffic sort of out of its normal course, and on the westbound end that closes it to eastbound. I'm hoping you all can follow that image. So And because I don't think we need, I don't think the goal is to close it in terms of making additional space, but I think it's to address the safety issues of having the traffic immediately adjacent to the highly populated area of the lawn of the market there. And I know my own child often scares motorists by running along the sidewalk there at any time of day. But anyway, I don't know if that's absolutely clear, but I think that by having just the one direction, moving it over and using some traffic calming, that we can achieve the same purpose. And the reason I selected just allowing the westbound is because it addresses the issue of traffic coming out of Roberson or coming out of Main Street, having it be redirected. In other words, all of that can still continue in its normal westward direction from that point. So, because that was one of the issues brought up in the report.
You end up basically closing just one turn lane on Greensboro Street rather than having to do as complicated a thing over at Main Street. That's your
point. Yeah, exactly.
This is just a request to set. I think it's premature to start to putting the whole plan together and put it out there. So maybe if you want to go ahead and develop that and put it together later, then we can do a request to set it a later date and consider the proposal.
Well, I'm not making a plan. I'm just throwing something else out in the mix that if people agree with the idea that we send it to Weaver Street, then, you know, they have that thought.
I'm trying.
And if we decide to do something, if we decide to have a public hearing, then
okay.
We can talk about
well, that. Let me speak up on this point because I brought this thought up, and let me go back to putting some context to it, which is that, you know, one of the things that I think I wasn't present for most of the meetings in which the downtown circulation study was concocted, but I think one of the pieces of input that was heard from citizens there, and that I know I have heard many, many times from a lot of people is, well, why don't you close down Weaver Street and make that a pedestrian area? And we looked at the possibility of a so-called Wooners.
Wooners, right.
Well, it's Dutch, so it would be sooner, actually. But anyway, shutting that street down. The point is that I've many times heard people express a lot of support for doing this almost on a permanent basis. And we ended up tossing that idea out of the circulation study discussion because, well, they're at peak traffic times, there are just way too many traffic problems already, and closing that street down or even turning it into a very motor vehicle unfriendly street would just be too disruptive, at least for the foreseeable future. But it had been suggested, well, but is this really an issue? Is it really the same issue on Sunday morning? And I would suggest to you that it's not the same issue on Sunday morning, although, you know, there are obviously some unusual Sunday morning traffic issues in town in general, that it's just not at all the same issue on Sunday mornings that it is on Monday evenings. So I had just suggested that we look at doing this, and, you know, I think what I would like to suggest is, and is that we look at doing this on that we schedule a public hearing and that we do this one time. We do this on one occasion to demonstrate the question of is this beneficial to the community, and not necessarily just beneficial to Weaver Street Market, but to the community at large. Are there benefits to this? And then after we've done it just one time, that, you know, it's not necessarily that we would pursue it after that point, but if it becomes clear that there are some benefits to it, but it's mostly a benefit to Weaver Street Market, then let Weaver Street Market decide whether it's sufficiently in their interest that they want to they want to bother with it. But it seems to me that that there's an opportunity to promote public safety with this arrangement. And I think that there are actually a lot of benefits that accrue to all of our downtown businesses to have so many people drawn mm-hmm. to downtown Carrboro on Sunday mornings and early afternoons, and I just think it would be worth the cost to us to do this on one occasion. And I think the other thing that should be clearly stated is Weaver Street Market did not request this. They did not ask for this, I don't know whether I never discussed it with Ruff and Slater or anyone over there.
Well, if they didn't ask for it, we're not going to charge them.
Particularly if we're going to do it on one experimental time. I mean, I think this is the other thing, is that perhaps if we did it once and we paid for it once, they would see the benefits of doing it, how it may be in their interest. But so I just want to, that's all that this was ever about.
Well, if we do it, I would ask that we do sort of a survey of downtown businesses to see what benefits accrued. So then we would have some data, you know, and we can pick from...
As a follow-up to the experiment, in other words, if we did an experiment?
Right. That we would say from, I guess, Weaver Street and Main Street meet all the way down to the downtown and say, okay, we had this shutdown of this one section of the road. Did you accrue any benefits to that? And I think that's a legitimate question to determine whether the thesis would... I'm big on data and factors.
Would there still be a public hearing involved to do the one time?
Yes.
So we would get to hear all that.
It would be, essentially what I'm proposing is that we would just pick a particular Sunday and plug it into that blank and pass this resolution.
I'd like to know what Ruffin and the Weaver Street Board think of this before we would bring it to a public hearing. I think it would be important to have them...
The public hearing is the time for the public to be heard from, and they're members of the public.
Yeah,
so
this impacts, you know, their planning tremendously as well.
Let's let them come. And
Mark, would you be amenable to considering the option I laid out as well at that time? What do you think? If staff can accommodate that.
Yeah, is that something that we could... That we could.
Dan's idea of not completely closed.
Yeah, right. Having just the one mic.
I would defer to the police department, public works, in terms of safety impact. The cost of it's going to be the same. It's going to take the same amount of time. And I just point out, just for y'all to think about, I believe that the Sunday brunch thing runs from like March through November. So you're talking about. Basically 8 or 9 months at $700 or $800 per pop. So you're talking $25,000 or $30,000 of cost in a year's time. So it wouldn't be insignificant to somebody.
Right. Well, as I say, I'm only proposing that we do it on one occasion at this point. So let me and also point out that naturally it seems like it would be a particularly poor idea to do on the Sunday that includes apple chill. Anyway. Hopefully truly needless to say. Anyway, the public hearing that was proposed is after apple chill, thank goodness. Anyway.
It might be good to do for Carrboro Day.
I thought they should for Carrboro. Maybe, no, they shut it down for July 4th. Yeah. For the train.
But I don't want to add to the complexity of understanding the significance of doing it by doing it on the same day as Carrboro Day, just for... If it's on an experimental basis. But that's an interesting thought, too. Let me suggest, could we... How would it be if we tried it, say, May 20th as a proposed
date? I move the item with May 20th in the date.
Okay. The resolution has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passes 6-1, but the passing of that is only to schedule a public hearing, so we will have a chance to hear from the public and more formally consider the possibility of doing this.
Can I make one final comment on this?
Sure.
I should probably say for when the public hearing. I know an awful lot of people who go to that event, and Weaver Street's lucky if they're making any money on them, to say nothing of the rest of the downtown merchants. So, I mean, a lot of people go there just to hang out, and it's great, and it's great for Carver, and I think it's great for the market because, you know, their vision is beyond what they sell in those 2 hours. But I think we'll find that the impact, a positive impact, certainly on the downtown businesses, is not going to be relevant in this case.
If it is a positive impact, I know of one small business in Carmel Mall that left and went to another mall because of the Thursday-Sunday events. They said that their customers could never get to them because all the parking was always taken. And I know that other, you know, so it's not, we think of it as this wonderful thing, and I think it's a wonderful thing, but for some of the businesses downtown, it really isn't. If you go to the best time to go to Harris Teeter is when there's music on the lawn at Weaver Street, because nobody else will be in there because their parking lot's full with Weaver Street folks. So it's a real, it's real double.
Anyway, sorry to open the conversation.
Well, we'll get into all of that discussion at a later time.
April 26th.
April 25th. 26th, whatever that day is.
25th.
April 25th. We will have a public hearing on that. Okay. Item D. We'll have a public hearing April 25th. From the chair, right there.
From the chair, I just wanted to clarify one thing, and that was, I think, not mean to in any way, shape, or form diminish what Weaver Street is doing.
No.
Is it a public function?
Is it proper for us to spend public money?
I understand. Yeah. Thanks, Bob. Yeah. All right. Item D6, Mr. Manager.
D6 is a review of the guidelines for selecting advisory board and commission members. The board will consider whether to amend the guidelines for selecting advisory board and commission members to require more information from board chairs explaining their recommendations when they make recommendations for appointments to the Board of Aldermen.
Can I speak
first
since I brought this up?
Oh, yes,
virtually.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, basically, my feeling is that we're appointing people to advise us, and I want good information about who's applying, and I want good information about why the person being recommended is being recommended. And so at our meeting back in February, I suggested that we get a report from the advisory board chairs, and Joel suggested that we should have a standard form for that, which I mocked up a possibility of how to summarize who the candidates are and who's being approved. And I also suggested that our liaison to whatever the committee is be in touch with that chair in between when this report comes out and when we meet to make the appointment, just to discuss it and make sure that our liaison sitting here with us also understands or, you know, is clear about, you know, who that is and why. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm not trying, you know, I certainly don't want to reproduce what's in the application, but, you know, like the process we went through in February where we made a lot of appointments, you know, I found it difficult for one thing, you know, looking at the side by side and then understanding why one was being recommended rather than another. And so I guess I'll you know, so I would like to use this form. I also think, based on some of our discussion, I developed this cover letter because, you know, the point was made, I think it was in the discussion of a planning board appointment, that, oh, so-and-so had been to our meeting, and we liked her. Well, if that's going to be a criteria, then people who are applying should know that. And, you know, that's not really a criteria, but I think having a cover letter that talks sort of broadly about participation in town government and about how citizens can get involved will, like, open the door for people to think more broadly about their own participation. So I guess there are three points for us to consider. One is the form for the board chairs. One is the cover letter that would go with an application. And one is the idea that we as liaisons would have an additional responsibility to make a communication with the board chair about appointments.
Well, the one thing I would add is maybe in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th paragraph, you have something that even if you don't get appointed to a board, please feel free to come to a regular Carborough Board Alderman meeting to discuss any issues that you have on any particular issue, however you want to phrase that. Because there's a sense when I was reading it that, you know, that you just go to that, say, planning board, and you may not be able to go to the planning board meeting, but you could come to the Board of Aldermen meeting. So I want that sense for people to, you know.
It gets at that filtering issue.
Right.
Right. Right. That's right.
I don't want people to feel like, well, I can only go to the planning board. I want to be able to come to, you know, any board and say what I have. My only other comment is I think you need the, and this is just me because I write big, I think you need more space. I would make what the first table that you had with the summary of qualifications, I would make that larger. I mean, we consistently do back front type things, so mm-hmm. I would make that larger, and I would make the sections instead of persons, I would put applicant recommended at this time. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, because they're all applicants. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I mean, the only other thing about, you know, they came and they liked them, well, sometimes they're the only person that came, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, some boards are more popular than others, and so I would just say, you know, it's a very few times that since I've been on the board, that the board chairs have said, well, I'm not going to, the reason why I didn't recommend this person is because I didn't like them. I don't think the board chairs work that way. I think they work more like,
we certainly hope not.
You know, I think they work more like, wow, they, you know, want to participate, and I think we want to make it as, you know, I think the board chairs are as, hopefully they are, they'll get the message they need to be, but as welcoming as possible. You know, and I guess my only other comment is, you know, sometimes you pick people because they don't have expertise, but they bring a different perspective to the board. And I'll give you a perfect example. I was on the Owasa board for 6.5 years. When I got appointed, I knew nothing about gravity sewers. Mm. Now I can tell you about sewers, septic tanks, fields.
Don't do that.
You know, anything you want to know about sewer, I can tell you about it. You know, on paper, I had no technical at all about it. And so I think, you know, we just need to be careful when we talk about what kind of expertise we want, because sometimes you need people who have no expertise, because they'll ask the questions, well, why are you going to do that? Because it may not, you know, it may make sense to the person, but it may not make sense.
No, that's a great point.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I used the word qualification right. rather than expertise.
Okay.
Hopefully speaks to that. Let me just point one other thing that I added in here that we should be clear about, and I want to see if people agree with this, is the idea that if it's been a year since the application was filed, that the board chair gets in touch with that person. Are you still interested? You know, there's this opening coming up. Any changes in your circumstances that we should know about and consider? And that's just good outreach to, you know, broaden participation mm-hmm. and keep people involved. Because, you know, often, you know, looking at the applications we had in our packet in February, right. you know, there was some that came in 2, 3 years ago. And, mm-hmm. you know, we don't know what's up with those people now.
Right. Current status. I want to thank you, Dan, for doing this. I know that the advisory boards operate differently, and I think that it makes a lot of sense to have a uniform way of looking at the nominees and being able to give us on the board here something that would standardize how we review it. So, well, thank you for your efforts. It's great.
I like this stuff too. There's something that I remember, I think Diana McDuffie worked on this, and she did some sort of an orientation. Mm-hmm. And I remember people getting very positive reviews, and I wonder if this letter of welcoming, I mean, especially with the example that that Joe just mentioned about, you know, sometimes when you get somebody new, it would be good to have an orientation, not just about the specific things of that committee, but people's like, okay, once it goes from this committee, what happens next? You know, how does that work with the Board of Aldermen, and how many times does it come back? You know, how the system works, under what rules? Okay. I remember when I joined the Human Relations Commission Board of the county, I got an orientation with the lawyers, and explain me, you know, what's quasi legal and what's not, and there are some boards that you need to know that, because you know you're representing the town, and what you said is it could get you in trouble, could get us in trouble, and I think it's a way to mentor folks, you know, about civic. Somebody mentioned city participation in an article about civic participation. You know, it would be good to have twice a year. You know, every 6 months, an orientation where sort of like when we get a new candidate, the town manager explains them, this is the department, this is how the system works. I think it would be a great benefit for some folks to just, you know, brief without spending much time.
There are advisory board training sessions that are
for the town of Carboro.
How often are they held, Trish? Three times over 2 years. Yeah.
Right. So maybe making it hard.
May need to be resuscitated. Some.
To say we invite you to the next whatever, you know, orientation session, so that.
And they are helpful. Yeah.
That's a good idea. And also, are we following this schedule that's in these guidelines of the October announcement and all that? Because, you know, it could be that as a matter of course, in October, we have a general orientation session for the whole idea of advisory boards and town government, just kind of, you know, lay it out for half an hour and answer questions. That might be a timely way to do it, and that could then be announced with the advertisement about the applications. So, you know, kind of kill two birds with one ad.
And, I mean, I remember, it doesn't have to be also the staff. I mean, something we volunteer board members can do it, or folks from the Institute of Government can also do this pro bono and other people.
I think it's so can I make an excellent a motion? Point. Yeah, I think it's time for a motion.
I would like to move that we include in our advisory, our guidelines for selecting advisory board, the use of this form with the modification suggested by Joel, that would be filled out by the board chairs, that we ask board chairs to contact people 1 year after their application or after their last contact, then that we attach the cover sheet with the changes suggested by Joel as a cover to the application form, and that the alderman liaisons to the advisory boards make contact prior to any appointment with the chair so as to make sure they are clear about the recommendations being made.
Could we ask the chair to contact their alderman liaison so that it doesn't kind of slip under the alderman's radar screen? I'm afraid that there might be a time when I didn't know that they were going to be appointing somebody.
Well, we'll see it in our packet, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
But okay. Because the chairs are generating this material, they'll know when they're ready.
So if they could make...
Makes it easier.
If both sides would be responsible for it, I'm just afraid I'll miss it. If I don't get an email or I'm worried about missing it. But that's okay. If you don't think we'll miss it, then...
Well, I mean, I don't mind. I
guarantee
you
I'll miss it.
I like
it. So.
Okay, we're going to miss it. So, yes, I'll change that in the motion to the board chair.
Well, second.
We have,
Actually, I'm not sure whether he's current or merely former, but an esteemed long-serving board advisory board chair. Actually, it's not an advisory board, in fact, but Mr. Ellington, would you like to can you come up and comment for a moment?
Absolutely. I was hoping that I would have the opportunity to speak to you for just one moment.
Richard Ellington, chair of the Board of Adjustments. And speaking as the one of the high-paid chairs of these boards, adding yet one more responsibility to my duty, just diminishes the money that I receive for this. I'm joking, of course.
The pay?
We're giving you dinner next week, Richard.
Yeah, right. Andrew, the town office. We do get a free dinner. That is greatly appreciated. One thing I would like to see this board do before they make this a full motion is do something that you did a couple of years ago when you were anticipating doing some making some changes to advisory boards where you limited the numbers of terms and whatever. You took the courtesy of inviting the advisory board chairs to come and talk with you for just a few minutes and get their feedback on this sort of thing. And basically what I'm saying is that speaking as a long-term, I think I'm working close to 20 years now on the Board of Adjustment, I would like to maybe have some, a question or two asked and mm-hmm. some feedback allowed from all of the chairs, not just myself, to any kinds of changes regarding procedures that we are to be using and whatever. Unless there's a long list of nominees that I'm not aware of that are standing in line trying to get, beat down our doors to get into our committees, we in fact probably, if we look around at the committees and take a full head count, you probably won't find enough volunteers to fill all of the vacant committee seats now. I know that there are at least three, I believe, on the Board of Adjustments right now, and I think I have two viable candidates for those seats at this very present time. So speaking just for myself, having too many candidates to choose from has never been a problem. And I'm not saying that other board chairs take the idea that a warm body is sufficient. I don't think that's the case at all. Anyone who is willing to serve as a board chair is doing it out of their for the work in their town, believe me. I think most of you on the board have served in the citizen advisory boards yourselves. I know that the mayor served quite capably with me, and I was delighted to have him on the board. And we benefited greatly from his expertise. I think that there are many times situations where we really need to know what's going on in the boards. And, the liaisons don't always attend all of the board meetings. I understand that. We know you guys have other things to do, too. You have a life outside of town hall. So many times I think it would be a lot better off if you would invite those of us to come and just have a chat. This is some of the things we're considering. We'd like to do this. We'd like a little more information, on your recommendations. And we'd like to know what you think is pertinent. Instead of giving me a form that I've got to fill out, let me tell you what I think, and then together we can come up with a form.
Thanks for that.
Thank you. I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
I'm totally amenable to putting off this vote. And
it is, although, Richard, I'm trying to think how to put this, delicately to you, but there are some other boards that are a little more popular, but
well, we have like seven or eight applicants.
We do occasionally run into.
We had seven or eight applicants for one planning board seat last week, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And the Economic Sustainability Commission. I think we've had some very a bunch of strong applicants to that for a while.
Okay.
But there are a few.
I would like to amend my motion.
It's a great point.
Which is that the items in the motion that I framed it previously be put on a upcoming agenda and that the advisory board chairs be notified and invited to come and comment.
That'll work.
I think that's an excellent idea, and I would further recommend that we go ahead and pick that date real quickly right now, when that would be.
Second. Oh, there you go.
Things alike. June 6th would be.
That's late.
Looks like it. Well,
we get it early in June.
We could be pretty busy in May. Wait a minute. Hold on. Oh no. You know. May gets eaten up in budget stuff. What about April? April 18th?
Can we do it April 18th?
Can we do that?
Is that a public hearing? No.
No.
The 25th. Yeah, April 18th.
Can we do it April 18th?
Courtesy review of 100 Roberson Street, report on solid waste issues, review and comment on TIP, and report on appearance commission and design, whatever that is.
Well, it sounds like we'll have several board chairs here.
Anyway, yeah, that's true. All right, so let me just say that the manager and I will work out a time for that to come back, and we will shoot for April 18th.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
All right.
Okay, so that's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Briefly, two more things on advisory boards, just real quick. We all got a request from the Transportation Advisory Board, and there was some email discussion about this request. The TAB asked for the Board of Aldermen to sort of formally appoint somebody to be a liaison to the Transit Partners Committee. It was suggested back that, you know, it's a public meeting, so why doesn't just one of them go? But let me suggest that we kind of pick a middle course.
That's actually not what I suggested. What I suggested was that they appoint their own representative,
right, since they know
and
who
that
they are.
We put that person on the distribution list. But that we don't need. We
okay,
don't
it's
need
been properly moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Matter passed unanimously. All right, and then the last thing is that we at long last have somebody, and actually somebody very, very qualified, to serve on the Visitors Bureau Board of Directors, John Wilner, the director of the Carrboro Arts Center, the Arts Center in Orange County in Carrboro.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that he be appointed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much, Madam Clerk, Mr. Manager, Attorney.
I have four items. I hope you all will indulge me. I'll try to be quick.
You have 1 minute each.
No, I have three items. Steve, is there any update on the roundabout for the Carrboro High School on that discussion? Or is there an update we should get on the 18th, perhaps?
We'll get you one. I've had a conversation with Neil Peterson about it and anticipate we may be getting something else from the school board, but I don't know that for sure. That might help this board determine the next steps. And
is Dale still here?
I don't know if Dale's gotten anything else or not, but that conversation was a couple of weeks ago.
Dale and TAB members are following up with the State Department of Transportation about the how acceptable or unacceptable changes might be.
Yeah, that's the other piece, because one of the issues is, along with many other issues, is that there is a driveway permit that's issued by DOT that would be impacted by any change in that intersection, and that potentially could hold up the construction of the high school if DOT didn't move pretty quickly on dealing with that from a driveway permit standpoint.
Thanks. My other question for Steve is, when the night of the advisory board recognition dinner, do advisory boards that are scheduled to meet that night, are those meetings canceled? or do they happen to have, does it end in time for them to have them?
So we know that I'm not directly involved.
If they're already scheduled, they start after the dinner.
Just whenever the dinner is, they start. Okay. Then my last point is I just wanted to comment on the board members have been getting emails from Scott Gardner of Duke Power about the Duke Energy Synergy merger. And I want to say for myself that, you know, I appreciate the service that Duke Power provides to Carrboro and the citizens of Carrboro, that we have a reliable source of energy and that our energy system, our infrastructure stays in place. But I also just wanted to take a minute to raise some concerns. One is that we know that, a few years ago, Duke paid a $25 million settlement on an issue to do with inappropriate cost accounting affecting customers in North Carolina. We also know that Duke was implicated in the California energy problem that brought Enron to Providence. So I guess, you know, since Duke feels it's incumbent on them to let us know about this merger, I want to let them know that I would like to see a higher ethical standard from that organization, which is a publicly regulated utility and should do so. The other point I want to make in that regard is that I think Duke often puts shareholder interests ahead of the public interest, and we see this particularly with the new nuclear power plants that they're proposing to build. And I hope that they would take a stronger look at energy efficiency and the ways that those investments can better serve both the financial and environmental health of its customers and of the broader community. So I just wanted to make those points on the record. So I'm done.
Thank you,
Dan. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Move.
All right.
Second.
Go, Marilyn. All those in favor of...
That was colorless.
We're adjourned.